Who is the enemy? Fellow freedom fighters, the enemy is imperialism, which uses as its weapons colonialism and new colonialism. Let us be very, very clear about this. Let us also not lose sight of the real objective, which is the liquidation of colonialism and imperialism in all its forms, political, economic, ideological, and the political unification of Africa, our dear continent. Then we must ask, what is imperialism? And what are the forms it has taken? And what other mask is it likely to put on?
The voice of Kwame Nkrumah, the first Prime Minister and President of Ghana, a founding father of African liberation and a proponent of Pan-African unity. Nkrumah's vision was of an Africa that was in full control of its destiny and free from all forms of domination. Looking around in 2021, one can safely say that Africa is not yet Uhuru, and the goal still lies far off in the horizon. Despite the political and institutional changes that occurred with the decolonization process in the second half of the 20th century, many colonial constructs remain to this very day. One of the most obvious and egregious symbols of these continuities is no doubt the CFA franc. The acronym of this currency, created in 1945 by the French Provisional Government, originally stood for Franc of the French Colonies in Africa. It still circulates in 8 countries in West Africa and 6 countries in Central Africa, and its imperial founding principles haven't really changed. Welcome. You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. I'm your host, Sean Macheza. Here at the State of Power podcast, we're interested in how financial power functions, how it mutates, and how it shapes the world around us. We also believe that if we are to understand the present, we need to put it in its proper historical context and try to understand the historical processes that have led us here. So for a deeper understanding of the CFA franc, I turned to Dr. Ndongo Samba Sila, a Senegalese development economist. He lives in Dakar and works with the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. Ndongo recently published a book written together with Fanny Pigard titled Africa's Last Colonial Currency, the CFA Franc Story. Through an exploration of the genesis of the currency and an examination of how the economic system works, the book outlines how colonialism persists in many African countries. I have to admit up front, I thought I had an idea about how France maintains its colonial domination, but the story Ndongo had to tell left me reeling. If you're not angry at the end of this conversation, then you're likely not paying attention. I began by asking Ndongo to tell me, what exactly is the CFA franc?
The CFA franc is the last colonial currency circulating in Africa. It was born in 1945, just after Second World War, and it was created by the French Provisional Government. At that time, what happened was that the French economy was in ruins because the French economy was devastated by the war, and the French economy had to be reconstructed. And obviously, the French economy was really weak. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the main question for the French Provisional Government was whether there should be one devaluation uniform across the whole French colonial empire. I have to remind that at that time, there was something called monetary unity. Monetary unity meaning one currency for whole empire.
So this is one currency for the whole of the French empire?
French empire in Africa, in some parts of the Americas, throughout the African continent, some parts of Asia, for example, like Indochina, etc.
So essentially, if you had one franc in Paris, it had the same value as one franc somewhere in Senegal, one franc somewhere in Indochina.
Yeah. That was what they called monetary unity. But yeah. In fact, the banknotes and the coins were rendered exotic. So that means that the banknotes in Paris would not be the same as the banknote in West Africa, for example.
Uh-huh.
You see. But the principle was that one currency for the whole empire.
Uh-huh.
But as the destructions following the war were heavier in the metropolis, so a decision to devalue the French franc vis-à-vis the US dollar, vis-à-vis the British pound, was something necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But the French provisional government did not want to devalue, have the same rate of devaluation for the whole empire.
Mm-hmm.
And this decision to have different rates of devaluation, different rates of devaluation due to, let's say, uneven impacts of the war,
yeah,
led to the creation of the so-called colonial francs.
Uh-huh.
And the CFA franc was born out of a devaluation of the French franc.
So the French franc was devalued only in the colonies, but not in was devalued in France, but not in the colonies. I want for someone who's not aware of a lot of economics, what is the advantage of a devalued currency?
Yeah, the French franc was devalued mm-hmm. everywhere, but the rates of devaluation were different
uh-huh.
between the colonies and the metropolis. Mm-hmm. You see. For example, the CFA franc was born at the same time as the Pacific franc.
Mm-hmm.
But the rate of devaluation applied to the Pacific part of the French colonial empire was different from the rate of devaluation for West Africa and Central Africa, for example. You see.
Uh-huh. And yeah. I want a specific explanation of what is the impact of the devaluation. What did it give as a positive for France?
When you devalue your currency, that means you lower your external value of your currency. That means that your currency will lose somehow purchasing power abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, your cost expressed in, let's say, in other currencies will mm-hmm. be lower. That means you will have the possibility to export more because you became much more competitive.
Uh-huh.
Your currency is lower, your costs are lower, so you can you can export more. But as also your currency has lost purchasing power, the price of imports will be higher. Mm-hmm. So that means your import bill could be more important if you maintain the same volume of imports, you see.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The French government devalued because they needed that devaluation.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, when they devalued the French franc, they took the decision to give a higher external value to the CFA franc. That mm-hmm. means, for example, when the CFA franc was born, we could exchange one CFA franc with 1.7 French franc.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. 3 years later, in 1948, one CFA franc was exchanged with two French franc. It was as if the colonies were much more developed than the
and much wealthier than France itself.
Yeah, and you see,
and this puts them at a competitive disadvantage because then they are more expensive than France.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
wow.
And if you take the case of Britain and its colonies, you would see that Britain had a currency higher than the currencies of its colonies, you see.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was normal. But why France did that? Because during the war, the trade ties between the French colonies and the metropolis had been severed. And the African colonies started to diversify their trade. And some of them even started to industrialize a bit, you see.
Yeah.
But after that, France wanted to reconquer its lost trade shares in its colonies.
Mm-hmm.
So by giving them an overvalued currency, those colonies were no longer competitive abroad. So that means that they could not sell abroad.
Uh-huh.
Instead of incurring losses, you see.
And so this puts France at a prime position now to trade with those colonies at an advantage.
Yeah, and at the same time, as they have an overvalued currency also, that they have the international purchasing power, to buy imports from France. That means that the colonies could serve as outlets for France, because the French economy was really weak. And
oh my God! So
did not compete abroad. You see.
So what happens is France devalues its own currency and leaves the colonies with stronger currency, so that the produce that France is making can be sold to these former colonies, and thus ensuring that they have a market for their products.
Yeah, market for their product on one hand. On the other hand, they could also have access to the raw materials from the colonies. Yeah.
Wow.
Because after the war, they restored their political control over the colonies.
But now, what I will then ask, the logical question to follow up there is, why would the colonies, the former colonies, agree to this? Why was it that when they got independence from France, they agreed to maintain this relationship? How did that happen?
Yeah, in fact, in the case of the former French colonies, decolonization has been a lopsided affair. It has not been, let's say, a full decolonization, but just superficial, partial decolonization. France anticipated that decolonization was something inevitable, unavoidable, because there was the war with, let's say, Indochina, and Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos took their independence. There was war with Algeria for independence. Ghana took its independence in 1957. Before, it was Morocco and Tunisia, which were protectorates, you see. So independence seemed inevitable. So France anticipated, telling to the African leaders at that time, most of them were trained in France. Most of them were even politicians in France, sitting as MPs in French parliament, you see. So France told them, we're going to give you your independence, but you will have independence without the attributes of sovereignty. For example, you will not have the right to get out of the France zone. That means you'll stick with the CFA franc. Your raw material policy will be determined by France. If France needs some strategic raw materials, yeah, you're not entitled to sell it abroad.
So essentially, France was like, we get first dibs. If you're selling something and we want it, we take it. You cannot sell it to someone else in competition with us.
Yeah. And there was also, let's say, trade preferences between France and also the colonies, because the colonies also, which became, let's say, sovereign states, in brackets, they also provided trade preferences to France. Yeah. And that explains why at the independence, while other countries, new independent countries in Africa, issued their own currency, this was not the case for the former French colonies, except Guinea. Guinea under Sékou Touré, because Sékou Touré had a different, let's say, background. Sékou Touré was a trade unionist. So that means he knew how to organize people, how to resist.
Yeah.
And so he was not like the other African leaders who were, let's say, bureaucrats, classical politicians.
And so, and many of them had been trained and educated in France as well.
As well, yes. So Sékou Touré said, yeah, we want our independence. And there was a referendum organized by France in 1958 asking the territories at that time, do you want independence or not? Sékou Touré and Guinea were the only ones who say that, yeah, we want independence. And so they took their independence in 1958. The others would take their independence only 2 years later, in 1960.
And France was okay with this?
Yeah, France was okay for Guinea, because in Guinea, the elections were not cheated. I think for the other parts of Francophone Africa, I think the referendum was rigged. And
I'd been under the impression that the French were like, okay, you can start your own currency. And then they went in with some underhand tactics, like printing fake notes, sort of trying to destabilize the currency just so it wouldn't work.
Yeah, they did that. It was called the Operation Persil. Operation Persil was a large, let's say, operation by French secret services to destabilize Sékou Touré. So they armed political opponents and they did their best to destabilize Sékou Touré. And one extreme measure they took was that they inundated, they flooded the Guinean economy with counterfeit banknotes. And those who did that operation wrote it in their book, in one book at least, saying
they,
that
they told on themselves.
Yeah, yeah, this was so successful. We managed to disrupt the Guinean economy.
Wow.
And it was also a message to the all other African countries, Francophone countries. If you want to get rid of French, you will face reprisal.
You will pay the price.
Yeah, you pay the price.
Yeah. And what about the other countries? Like say, all the other countries in Western Africa, say...
Yeah. Beyond
without going deeply into detail with all of them, but what are the broad movements that we saw with them in their relation to the CFA franc?
Yeah, beyond Guinea, there was two other interesting experiences of delinking from France. There was Mali, first 1962, under the leadership of Modibo Keita. Modibo Keita was a socialist leader, and he understood that with the CFA franc, there could be no prospect of genuine economic development. So he broke the link with France in 1962, but he was ousted from power. 1967. Another interesting experience was the experience of Togo. Togo was led by Sibanis Olympio, who wanted to diversify economic relationships away from France, you see, because Olympio had good, let's say, relationships with, for example, wanted to have good relationships, for example, with the likes of Germany, the US, etc. Yeah, and he planned to have a national currency for Togo. So the decision was taken to issue the Togolese national currency. The central bank was created, but days before the launching of the currency, he was killed.
He was killed?
Yeah, by Togolese soldiers, which have, for some of them, been trained in France.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And this was also a reminder that, yeah, if you want...
So you pay the price if you try to...
1963, you know.
Wow.
So through strong repression, France managed to maintain the CFA franc in its, former colonial empire.
So lots of coercion, lots of underhand dealing, the use of, like you say, with the Togolese president, it was French-trained Togolese soldiers who killed him.
Yeah.
And all of this then forces the former colonies to stay within this union.
Yeah.
And so take us to the present day. What does it look like now? I mean, what is the FCFA and how does it work?
Yeah, for now we could say that the CFA franc refers to two currencies. Two different currencies obeying to the same principles of monetary management. When the CFA franc was born in 1945, it was the single currency circulating in the sub-Saharan Africa part of the French Empire. But since, let's say, the independences, it refers to two different currencies, one in West Africa called the Financial African Community, Franc of the Financial African Community, and the other one in Central Africa, the Fund of the Financial Corporation in Central Africa. So we have two different monetary unions and two central banks issuing each a CFA franc.
And how do these relate then to each other and to France?
Well, in fact, the two monetary unions are subjected to a number of principles of management. The first one is the fixed peg. Fixed peg meaning that the value of the CFA franc, external value of the CFA franc, is tied to the value of the French franc before. And now, since, let's say, since the arrival of the euro, the value of the CFA franc is pegged to the euro. That means, for example, If the euro appreciates vis-à-vis the US dollar, the CFA franc will appreciate. That means we'll have a higher value vis-à-vis the US dollar.
And no. And this is still with that disadvantageous differentiated rate that they had in 1945?
Yeah. Because they had...
So there was never a review, sorry to interrupt. There was never a review of the exchange rate, even now in the present?
Just one time. In 1994, there was a 50% devaluation of the CFA franc vis-a-vis the French franc. Yeah, that means that since its birth, 1945 until now, there was only one revision of the CFA franc parity towards what is called its anchor. That means the reference currency, which was the French currency.
You see, and is now the euro.
Now the euro. But the CFA franc has always been a floating currency vis-a-vis the US dollar, because the franc was floating against the US dollar, at least after 1971.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The second principle is a free movement of capital and incomes. That means, for example, the French investor can invest and disinvest freely. They could also repatriate all their profits and dividends and so on, their incomes, freely. This is the second principle. The third principle is that the French Treasury, not the Bank of France, the French Treasury promises to lend the French currency whenever the central banks, the one in Central Africa and the other in West Africa, are devoid of any foreign exchange reserve. For example, if the Central Bank of West Africa do no longer have any dollar, any euro, any pound selling, the Central Bank of West Africa can ask the French Treasury to lend, let's say, reserves. That means to lend euros, for example. It's called the French Guarantee of Convertibility.
That means so the French Treasury says, regardless what happens to the CFA franc, we guarantee, is promising to pay the bearer on demand as they put in money. Only is the French Treasury promising to maintain the value of the French of the CFA franc. Do I get that right?
Yeah, that's right. That means that whenever foreign exchange reserves are needed to defend the currency, the French Treasury will be there. Will be there. And this has two counterparts. The first counterpart is that the two central banks are obliged each to deposit some part of their foreign exchange reserves at the French Treasury.
Okay. So wait a minute. So this is not like the French saying, we've got a lot of money and we're going to guarantee the foreign exchange reserves. No, they're saying, give us your foreign exchange reserves.
Yeah.
And we will keep it for you, like a parent keeping pocket money for a child.
Yeah.
And give it to you when you need it.
Yeah. That's the point. At the time of independence, it was 100%.
100% of all foreign exchange.
All foreign exchange reserves, yeah.
And so essentially, these countries had no control at all over their money supply.
No control at all. And you see, at the time of independence, the central bank's headquarters were located in France.
It was
only during the 70s, late 70s, that the headquarters were moved to Dakar and Yaoundé. Dakar for West Africa and Yaoundé for the Central Bank of Central Africa, you see. At that time it was 100%. In the late 70s, it was 65%. And from the mid-2000, it was 50%. That means, for example, if Cote d'Ivoire sell one million US dollar of cocoa, at least half of this amount will go back to the French Treasury.
Wow.
You see, so this is, let's say, the counterpart to the so-called convertibility guarantee. It means you have to deposit 50% of all your foreign exchange reserve at the French Treasury. And all the conversions between, for example, if the Cote d'Ivoire sells 1 million US dollar of cocoa, half of its this amount will be deposited to the French treasury. This amount have to be converted in euro, you see.
Yeah.
And the conversion will happen at the French foreign exchange rate in Paris.
Uh-huh. So these countries have no control really over how this exchange happens. The French treasury is in control of everything relating to the CFA franc's relations to other currencies in the world.
Yeah, and the second counterpart is that the French government is represented in the organs of the two central banks. You see?
You know what? I've read up a bit on this, but the more you explain, the more absurd this sounds.
Well, but how it works, and they have a veto power. But this veto power has become implicit in the statutes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but so, before it was really clear that they have a veto power, formal veto power in the statutes of the central bank. But now this has become implicit. That means that monetary policy of the 14 African countries is managed by the French treasury.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then now, okay, so this situation is untenable. And I think there's been a bit of protest against this. Unfortunately, you know, I'm from Zimbabwe, and this is, there's this rupture between Francophone Africa and Anglophone Africa, which we really have to fight to kind of bridge. And we don't get to hear about this.
Yeah.
So it comes into the news now with like, oh, they are solving a problem and they're coming up with a new currency, and it's celebrated as like a big step forward. So explain to me now this talk of the echo currency. Does this solve the problem of the CFA franc?
Yeah. Before answering this question, I would like just briefly to show how monetary imperialism functions.
Yes.
Because the CFA franc had a number of advantages for France.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, France is a, let's say, junior imperialist power.
Mm-hmm.
France does not have, let's say, the military power or the economic power of the United States.
Yeah.
France does not have a financial place like London, you see.
Yeah.
And France is not an industrial power like Germany or Japan, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So French wanted to maintain a status of global power.
Yeah.
Without having all these, let's say, advantages of, let's say, its rivals like the US, Britain, etc. Mm-hmm. But with the CFA franc, France has the advantage of having access to the raw materials, to the labor of 14 African countries in its own currency.
Wow.
You know, the trade, world trade, is majority invoiced in US dollars. That means if you want to buy cocoa, you need US dollar. If you want to buy cotton, you need US dollar. If you want to buy any import, generally you need US dollar.
Yeah.
But with the CFA franc, France is not obliged to have US dollars to buy things in Africa.
So they bypass this limitation altogether. They use their own currency to get access to resources from 14 different countries.
Yeah, and they could have access to this raw material on credit. Why on I say credit. On credit? Because they could just say, put numbers on computers.
Yeah.
Because the central bank, the two central banks had an account at the French treasury. And all these financial and trade operations between France and those countries happen through this account. So if the French want to buy something in Africa, they will just credit that account. You know?
Yeah. Wow.
That's how it works, you know? And this has allowed France to save on its foreign exchange reserves.
Yeah.
And also to maintain a stronger French franc, because the French franc was a really weak currency, you see.
So if France had decoupled from all its colonies and they had gained their own monetary sovereignty and were not paying into the foreign treasury, France's economic status would be very different from what it is right now.
Well, at least, what would happen is that many French companies would struggle in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Africa, in Africa, France has been losing trade shares, even mm-hmm. in its former colonial empire.
Yeah.
And with a monetary delinking, this will exacerbate this trend. Because wow. French companies are obtaining contracts not based on competitivity or innovation, but just on politics.
Simply for the politics.
Politics.
The more you understand how deep it goes and the impacts, it's still a colonial relationship. There doesn't seem to be anything that has fundamentally changed in how the French have been relating to their former empire.
Yeah, it's really a colonial currency. Even if we should not even talk about a neo-colonial, it's still colonial.
Still a colonial.
The four principles structuring the workings of this currency were laid in 1945, and even before. And they are still there, you see.
Yeah. And so now, yeah, this colonial currency, is it undergoing any reform, any change? What's this talk of the ECO? Does this solve the problem of the CFA franc?
In fact, the ECO has created new contradictions. Why? Because the ECO at the origin is the short for ECOWAS. Mm-hmm. And ECOWAS means Economic Community of West African States. So it's an economic zone gathering mm-hmm. 15 West African countries. That means the 8 countries using the CFA franc and 7 others who are their neighbors, you see.
Okay. Uh-huh. So these are not necessarily former French colonies.
No.
Yeah.
You would find Nigeria in it, Ghana, Cabo Verde, Guinea, mm-hmm. Sierra Leone, Liberia.
Yeah.
You see. And the ECOWAS had a single currency project for the whole West Africa region since the 80s, you know, 1980s. Mm-hmm. And recently in 2019, they said, we want to launch our currency in 2020, but we will call it ECO as a short mm-hmm. for ECOWAS.
Uh-huh.
This was June, July 2019.
In okay, December, so this is not an old, this is very new. This is a new, well, the launch is very recent.
In fact, nothing has been launched for now.
Uh-huh.
But there was this project to launch the ECOWAS single currency last year. Mm-hmm. They planned it since 2019. But what happened was that in December 2019, mm-hmm. the same day where the ECOWAS head of states were meeting in Nigeria to decide mm-hmm. about the fate of the ECO as a single currency for 15 countries, that same day in Cote d'Ivoire, Alassane Ouattara, the Ivorian president, and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, decided they would rename the CFA franc ECO.
They would renegotiate?
They would rename the CFA franc into ECO.
Oh, wow.
That means they stole.
So they preempt this new currency by naming their own existing currency.
Yeah.
Wow.
They could have chosen 1,000 different names for
but they wanted
the
that one.
The CFA franc. But they choose ECO just to preempt the, let's say, the regional currency. And Nigeria, the strongest power in West Africa, did not like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are in a complete, let's say, I would not say mess, but it's not an easy situation.
Yeah.
Because the French parliament has ratified the change of CFA franc into ECO.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the ongoing conversation within the ECOWAS group has to either change and come up with a new name or actually derail their project and find something else.
Yeah. For now, we do not know. Because only Nigeria spoken loudly say that we do not like what the French, the Francophone countries are doing. We do not like that. Mm-hmm. Only Nigeria say that. But the French logic is really clear. Mm-hmm. They want to enlarge the CFA franc zone in West Africa to all countries except Nigeria. They want to isolate Nigeria, you see.
Uh-huh. Why not Nigeria? Because it's too different from the French colonies?
Nigeria is too big.
It's too big.
You know, Nigeria is represents at least 2/3 of the GDP of West Africa, the whole West Africa. That means the 15 countries plus Mauritania.
Wow.
And it's half of its population. And you know, the so-called convertibility guarantee could not be extended to Nigeria because Nigeria is so big and Nigeria will never accept to be under the tutelage of the French.
Of the French.
Treasury. And Nigeria even asked the French, the Francophone countries in West Africa to delink from the French treasury if they want to have to go forward in the process of monetary integration in West Africa. You see,
that
is not the project of the Francophone countries, especially Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire. Because in fact, you know, the CFA franc is linked to power politics. If you want to be elected or if you want to stay in power as a Francophone country, a leader of a Francophone country, you should not talk about the CFA franc. You have just to say it has shortcomings, it had advantages, but we are happy with it.
So what happens if you say I'm running on the platform that we will remove the CFA franc?
Well, you would be removed from power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've seen it. France essentially supports candidates and finances those people who will maintain their a hold over these countries.
In fact, France even does not need to finance. In fact, this has been, incorporated by the African political leaders themselves. They know that they don't have to talk about the CFA franc, never. Because if they want to be elected, they have to be in good terms with France. And being in good terms with France is never to talk about the CFA franc.
Wow.
So it's like a tacit, let's say, agreement between the political leaders in Francophone countries and France. Nobody talks about the CFA franc, or only to tell banalities like it's double currency.
Wow, so it's a self-perpetuating sort of system. But are we seeing cracks? Are we seeing any light at the end of the tunnel for those African countries that want to move away? Are there movements? Is there anything in the not so distant future that's pointing at something different happening?
Yeah. Fortunately, there have been more and more, protests against the CFA franc. Since 2015, we have seen more and more intellectuals, economists, social movements, Pan-African movements, etc., challenging the currency, showing why it's a colonial currency, why it is harmful for development, etc. And I think that the recent reform introduced by Emmanuel Macron and Alassane Ouattara was a way of saying that, yeah, we are going to address, let's say, some criticisms about the CFA franc. In their reform, they address only the symbolic aspects of the critique. You know, for example, many social movements tend to say that the name CFA franc is colonial. The fact that they are representatives of the French government sitting at the organs of the central bank is colonial. The fact that the coins and banknotes are still manufactured in France, this is colonial. The fact that the French exchange reserves of the central banks are deposited with the French treasury, this also is a colonial relic, you see.
Yeah.
And Macron and Ouattara have tried in their reform to address that. You know, that means saying that there will no longer be any representative in the BCAO, and the BCAO, the Central Bank of West Africa, will no longer be obliged to deposit with the French treasury its foreign exchange reserve. You know, those are their reform. But you know, those are not really reform because, for example, in their agreement, their new agreement, they say that if there are, let's say, some issues, some problems, for example, within the BCAO, and they need the French guarantee, so the French representative will come back and will have their say.
So they may not be having an office and sitting there, but maybe coming in as an advisory role or as something not necessarily structural, but still having influence.
Yeah, and they are obliged every day to do the financial reporting, the central bank, the financial reporting to France.
to France.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's essentially what they did in the 70s when they moved the headquarters from France.
Yeah, yeah.
But essentially maintained their control.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all symbolic.
It's all symbolic, yeah. And you know, people like me, we say, yeah, we have to other symbolic aspects, but also the anti-development aspects. For example, why maintain this back to the euro? We do not need this back to the euro.
Yeah.
And I would go even further. There is no economic justification for maintaining a monetary union in the form of French Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Because this monetary union has no coherence whatsoever, except that it has been a colonial product.
Except that it was brought together by France, yeah.
Yeah. And so, if you look at economic literature on both of the monetary unions, you would see that countries would gain more having their own national currency than being together in the single monetary zone.
Yeah, they need the flexibility to deal with their own economic reality and deal with their own financial supply peg their own value of their own currency.
That's... In fact, they united only to benefit France, because when they unite, they have a single currency, transaction costs are lowered for those who trade. You know, if a French company comes, for example, in a Francophone Africa, in the West African Monetary Union, the transaction cost will be lower because you have just one single currency.
Wow.
It's a type of integration, let's say, of vertical integration benefiting only the metropolis and not the countries themselves.
Yeah. So
we have to break up this zone.
That seems to me like the only option to renegotiate amongst themselves, the countries that are part of this, to say, okay, let's decouple, and if we're coming back together, let it be by choice, not by French conquest.
Yeah,
of course, I can understand there may be some cultural similarities, forced also. These are not natural cultural similarities, but because of the French influence, maybe that might be a reason. But still, it should be by choice.
Yeah, and normally the African countries, each African country had the right to, let's say, to dismember from the French zone.
Yeah.
This is written in the Treaty of Monetary Union. They have the right. And in just within a delay of 6 months, they could issue their national currency.
Wow. Yeah.
But they would never do that because they know that they would face French reprisal.
They would face.
African leaders are not really working for their peoples. They are working for France and for their own interests.
Yeah. That's and their currency allows them to go and live a luxury life in France.
yeah, because the currency is so overvalued. In Dakar, you would see how life is expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, very expensive. But this is a legacy of colonialism, because, you know, at that time, the colonial administrations, they were French, but they wanted to maintain the same standard of living in the colonies.
And in the colonies,
you see. And this has a pattern. This is a pattern that has survived colonialism.
Mm-hmm. Now, so now you have the new elites just stepping into those shoes.
Yeah. Now we, when I say we, I include myself. Mm-hmm. We are the new colonial administrators. Yeah. We live like colonial administrators.
Wow. Yeah.
That's how it works. But for the majority, it's poverty. That's why you saw recently in Senegal many protests, because those protests came from the indigenous. What I call the indigenous is somehow a metaphor describing what has been the condition of African populations during colonialism. During colonialism, there was this code de l'indigena, the code for indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And the indigenous were distinguished from the citizens. And now the indigenous people are revolting against the neocolonial state.
And they're saying, we want something different. We need a new social contract.
Yeah, a new social contract, and get rid of French domination, get rid of neocolonialism, you know, and have a proper development policies which will allow the youth to have, let's say, some prospects, some bright prospects, you see.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of what you said, and it's really going to cause a lot of thinking on my part. And I feel almost embarrassed on my own personal, I mean, I consider myself a bit well-read and a bit open, and I've heard about the franc before, you know, an article here, a mention there, but I didn't understand just how deeply this goes. And I can assume a lot of people probably are in the same state. To round off, what would be your final sentiments? What would you say about this CFA franc, and what should we like? What's our takeaway from this conversation?
Yeah, I am really happy that now the conversation about the CFA franc has let's say gone beyond the let's say the Francophone countries. Mm-hmm. It's really important that our brothers, sisters, comrades in Anglophone countries, Lusophone countries, Arabic countries, in the diaspora, all our friends abroad, be interested in this issue, because it's important that they help us fight against mm-hmm. this colonial currency, mm-hmm. because we could not expect any prospect of development for African populations if we do not get rid of the CFA franc. And at the same time, the CFA franc is an experience allowing us to understand under which conditions monetary integration could be beneficial between countries with different characteristics. Mm-hmm. In Africa, we say we want to have single currencies, but single currencies, a single currency project are not really good economic projects. Mm-hmm. It depends on the circumstances.
On the terms on which you have them. Yeah.
On the design. Unfortunately, in Africa, even the ECHO project with the for 15 African countries is just a pale replica of the Eurozone. And the Eurozone is a catastrophic monetary project. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we want to mimic that. So I think we have to be very careful in these projects of monetary union. Mm-hmm. We could have many different forms of monetary cooperation, which will enhance Pan-Africanism, development, and so on. But single currencies could be dangerous, could be really harmful for our populations.
If it's not done the right way, yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, man. This is, I have to go sit and think now. it makes me angry, you know, like how it's, we need to get this information out there.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you are angry.
That's the point. Awesome. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Sean.
Cheers.
Yeah, speak
later.
Soon.
Let's speak soon.
Decolonization is unfinished business. The story of the CFA franc is but one of the many ways in which Africa's true liberation is deferred. There are many others, such as debt and unfair trade treaties, for example. We need to do all we can to dismantle these structures that have kept Africa from her true potential. Thank you for listening this far. I have been your host, Sean Macheza, in conversation with Dr. Ndongo Samba Sila, one of the authors of the book, Africa's Last Colonial Currency, the CFA franc story. If you'd like to explore similar content, please do check out the first three episodes of this podcast, which dealt with other aspects of our financial system, such as public banks and cooperative finance. TNI's material is all free, but we would greatly appreciate your help to keep doing the work we do. If you'd like to find out more about how you can boost TNI's work, please click on the Support TNI tab on our website, tni.org. If you have specific questions, requests, or suggestions for the podcast, please send an email to podcast@tni.org. You can also find us on social media at TN Institute on Twitter and Transnational Institute on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.